No disclosure. That's the deed. All right. Anybody have an idea what's happening here? So this was an article in New York Times a couple years ago that this province in China had made a rule about saluting cars as a way to keep kids safe because there's no sidewalks, there's no signage, there's no speed bumps. And one of the quotes in the article is by a grandfather of a student. It says, cars coming in both directions are a bigger hassle. Sometimes the kids are just turning in circles and they get kind of stuck saluting. So again, I put this there. It's kind of a prompt and illustration of some of the really kind of ludicrous workarounds that we try and do in public health or in education or other sectors. Okay. So, one final question. If all kids attending school in the U.S. travel to school on school buses instead of private cars, how much travel distance would be saved annually? Any guesses? You're in the we're in the millions here, but we're in the billions here. So 3 billion. Anybody actually believe it's D? It's actually D. Yeah. So 62 billion miles a year. We can fiddle with napkin math, but the point here is again to illustrate the magnitude of the impacts of school districts on kids' lives and on efficiency in government, for that matter. So. I approach this problem from using a healthy urban planning framework. This figure is adapted from Hugh Barton. And basically, it really just tries to mash up this idea of an ecosystems and ecological approach with some of the public health approaches. And it's really about planning for people in a person-centered approach. It's making health explicit in planning. So here's my own framework, which is a mess. So the point here is just to take away that siting is at this juncture of a lot of much bigger contexts, things like desegregation and financing and school performance, which are really challenging factors that dictate how schools grow and build. And so I was really interested on this far end of this juncture of siting and these health impacts. So what I did is I used key informant interviews. I did a lot of document review from different planning and school board documents. And then I did some profiling with several data sources you'll see here, different GIS data. It really was intended to triangulate on this idea of decision-making about school siting. So the study area was in northern Kentucky. You've got Cincinnati, Ohio right here. It's a mess, the jurisdictions there. We've got about 16 school districts. You can see these are some of the urban areas with school districts, independent school districts. I looked at these three large counties, Boone, Kenton, and Campbell, and the number of schools there was something about in the 300, primary and middle, and I'm focused primarily on those primary and middle schools. So here's just a quick profile of those counties. Again, roughly we've got about 30,000 students between, 35,000 students total. As you'll see, I wasn't able to get to Campbell, so I only studied this county of Boone and Kenton. One point to note here at the bottom, the increase in enrollment over the past 15 years. And so Boone County was a very fast-growing district in terms of new kids entering the system. Here are the folks that I interviewed. Again, I wasn't able to get to the education partners in Campbell County, but I did interview the superintendents and both the others, a school board member, this architect who was a consultant for all three, who was the guy who would kind of make the plan concrete, make their strategic planning, a 5-year facilities plans concrete, and then I interviewed planning directors in each of the areas, and again, there's a lot of fragmentation in this region. So you did have a lot of separate planning agencies. All right, just some quick, a lot of what I did was really descriptive background stuff just to get in a context of what was happening in this environment. And so this just shows the correlation between the campus size and your building. It just corroborates what we're seeing nationally with increasing campus size. I was looking at some of the fiscal characteristics of these districts. Worth noting here, per pupil spending, this number is a lot different than a lot of different places in Oakland, California. That's about $2,000 It's less even in some cases. So something to keep in mind when we're thinking about using these results. Per student cost for transportation as well. There's some differences. Either way, these numbers here, these annual costs are amounting to about 5 to 10% of expenditures in school districts. Okay, so again, I apologize, these all can't be read, but one of the keys on this slide is this idea of we're always working on last year's money. This revenue cycle in schools was a big challenge for them to be able to proactively make good decisions about where schools were located. This is from one of the counties. We don't have time to guess anymore, but I'll just tell you, this is where the school was. This is a brand new school built in 2005. This is a Home Depot. This is a grocery store. This is a strip mall, basically. Two major highways. There's no connectivity whatsoever to the small amount of residential density that you have. I asked a bunch of questions about community centeredness. I think the theme here is that all of the respondents were very positive about this idea of community centeredness, and they believed in it, and they wanted it to happen, but it just didn't match with what was actually going on in those districts. A few more here, and this kind of illustrates again this demographic shift, which we have to be very aware of, and this is what a lot of school facility planners are talking about as we see neighborhoods changing, as we see a grade tide, as we see demographics changing. This case, it was a very suburban, a white suburban district, and a lot of older people that didn't want to necessarily be a part of that school district planning. All right, another scenario. This one is actually pretty interesting. This was in a different county. This was in Boone County, and here we have a school. This is a joint use campus, middle and elementary school. Here we have a residential area, and in fact, this is bordered by a fence. So these students would have to drive out to the highway to get to the school right here. And of course, you see a park. No access to that park. So we've got duplication of recreation facilities, lots of issues. I didn't have great GIS data, but I looked quickly at some of the residential density. And again, this just corroborates this idea that it's hard, we can't say which came before the other, but it kind of connotes this idea of school sprawl, so that we've got a lesser density around the schools in newer schools, whereas in more traditional neighborhoods there was a lot more students in that area. How am I doing on time, Rachel?
3 minutes.
3 minutes, oh boy. All right, let's just skip this one and this one. The planners, the school folks, they were, again, very cognizant of what was happening nationally and what the trends were and what they were facing, but it just wasn't translating in their work. So, for instance, they knew that these models of new urbanism were things that they should aspire for, but they just weren't able to implement that. All right, another scenario. This is actually the school where my nephew attends, and another very egregiously poorly planned school. This theme came up a lot, the idea of chasing the population. Apologize, I just had those extra 4 minutes.
That's right.
Interacting with developers. This was a really interesting scenario, and you'll see how this kind of manifested. So there was Boone County, one school district actually did start to have those conversations with developers via the planning agencies and started to get ahead of that growth curve, and they weren't necessarily chasing the population. Let me show you, there's this idea of this competition and speculating for land. It's a poor way to govern and build communities. So here is a scenario where the school district did work with the planning agency and the developer, and as a condition of a zoning permit to build this new residential area, the developer would have to allocate land for the school. And so that was done, and it's fairly well centered. Unfortunately, There's a school. Unfortunately, that developer actually was put in jail later for fraud. So we got to find better, more reliable partners. I don't think it had anything to do with this relationship with the local government. But let's just get to the point here. So. Here's a final model, and again, this was in that same district, and this is kind of a reuse site where they were able to. So we didn't vacate an existing school in an old neighborhood, but we really saw it as an asset and started to build on that. So this is a campus that was essentially kind of reopened and reinvigorated through some renovation, and as you can see, it's a lot more community-centered in that sense. So I got like 1 or 2 minutes here. Let's talk about the health role. So as you saw, I did not interview health people. I was the health person. I was wearing a hat as a employee of a local nonprofit hospital, and as well as a intergovernmental planning agency looking at health. So. I was really just trying to prompt these planners and educators to talk about health in a way that they might not have considered before. So it was interesting. Again, even though all these things we had talked about prior were very directly related to health, you know, we didn't explicitly state that. When we actually use the word health, it kind of it's a misnomer here, because they move to this traditional idea of health and medicine and healthcare and access, and so their comments here were not quite as favorable. There's nothing you can do extra, but some were receptive, and they wanted to have this framing, this language of public health to use in their work. They just didn't know how to do that. So one thing I did, here's I did a Wordle thing, whatever, a word count of all the transcripts, and so this is what was said, and then here's what actually was in my interview guide. And so the interview guide is up here on this top axis, just frequency of words, and responses are on the yellow in the bottom. So things like eminent domain here and developers were things that I didn't even mention, but they volunteered fairly frequently. So. Again, it's just trying to illustrate this idea of speaking a similar language. So, recommendations quickly. It's hard to draw conclusions from this work. It was really meant also to be practice, and so it's to start this dialogue between the sectors. But the one thing that was clear is that local planning committees, or some might call them school-based decision-making, that those were absent and needed to be more present. Things like location does not necessarily mean connectivity. We saw that campus that was in the neighborhood, but there was a fence. So there's these sequential steps. Things like LEAD. So in Kentucky, LEAD, so this is Leadership for Excellence. Somebody help me out here. Energy and Design, Environmental Design. So their system, this is new construction. They have a 100-point system where they rate based on these green building standards, right? And so 11 of those points are awarded for access to public transit and connectivity. And so Kentucky prides itself and boasts often about their green schools, but as you saw, they're not very connected. So things like LEAD might be a way to leverage these districts into being more thoughtful about the location. If it's going to compromise their status. So anyway, just some ideas. Hope it's useful. Any clarifying points, we can address those now. No? All right. Oh, I have one more great slide. sorry. So again, this is kind of a segue to the others. Just this idea of, let's think about then these dependencies between sectors. So for those of us who have worked on safe routes, we know that we tend to only fund within 2 miles, and that's a limitation. For those of us that talk about joint use, when we've got some of these examples that I've shown, is joint use really going to be effective when kids are having to, there's no other amenities around the school, there's no other destinations, and they have to drive so far. And then even things like farm to school. So has our schools brought onto farmland and displaced, you know, that local agriculture component. So just things to think about. Thank you.